Hello again, this is Mystic Babylon Open Mic Poetry Podcast, broadcasting from Near the Hate with, as usual for my audio podcast, two other poets. The two poets are Joanna Plantin, whose pen name is Monique Marquisa de Magdalena, and the other poet is named Dorothy Walters. Joanna, or Monique as she calls herself, is going to have an all-female poetry collective with a first show December 2nd. Info about this can be found at www.thebeatmuseum.org or www.thewordparty.com. From what I understand, it will be at the Beat Museum at 7 p.m. the aforementioned day. You can hear some of Monique's early all-girl band at www.inflatableboyclams.com. She hopes to have a website running at www.moniquepoet.com within a few weeks or so. Dorothy Walters has two books out. She is into Kundalini Awakening and writes about it in her books. Her poetry book is entitled Marrow of Flame, which are poems of a spiritual journey. And she has another book, a spiritual autobiography, called Unmasking the Rose, which she describes as a record of a Kundalini initiation, also with some poetry in it. She has a blog also at www.kundalinisplendor.blogspot.com. Must I remind you to buy our books? My book is available from most online bookstores and is called Spirits of Bondage and Inherent Transcendence. I probably will only read 60 or 70 of the poems online from that book, which has a total of about 180 poems in it, so please buy it to read the rest of the poems. I want to publish another book of poems that I have, but I need your support so I can afford it. At least, thanks for listening. All the URLs will be listed in the show notes on the Mystic Babylon website. The poetry segment will start shortly. Thank you. This is me, John Rhodes, again. This first poem I'm going to read, entitled Persecution of the Halfpenny Christian, is about the feeling we have all had of having been given less than a penny for your thoughts and still thought we were getting enough. I lived in Mexico for a while, and they had 10 centavo pieces down there in the market that at the time were being used for even less than a half a cent. Sometimes we get absolutely nothing of value from anyone else, and still we make it by. I hope this poem has a little more value to you than that and rates in your mind as worth at least a penny's worth of inspiration. Here's the poem. Why do you corrupt my day, and why can't I keep your rage at bay? I am not a sinner, but I am poor without pay. I can hear you mutter that Saul is here to stay. Why is it that nobody can say, give me some joy today? We can't have all gone astray. Instead of sharing, I have to fight over what I have been spiritually fed. Be aware that I eat no red herring or cheat with my ego or act socially daring. With persecution as my state of mind and my John Hancock signed, I find no Godstead as I lie down, losing all my bearing, and instability fall behind, out of my head with my forehead creased and lined. Do you want to tear down my house because you had to crawl on all fours like a mouse? Why is a whore not a spouse? How can I say good morn when all you offer me is Satan's tail and scorn? Do I have to think thusly that I never should have been born? Is my emotional halfpenny space not fitting anymore and has no place? It stays in my soul like a chore and bruises my mind and makes it sore. Don't take me from my cross and make Jesus just a loss. The second poem, entitled 1 and 5, addresses the cathartic experience of a potter making a pot and what God must have thought and felt if he made a little clay doll named Adam, like potters around the world many times have done, imitating God, not with the success that God seems to have had, though. Here is the poem. The potter can't create perfect pots. If 1 and 5 are good, then the potter knows he's not a dud. The 1 in 5 pots that the potter makes that are good shine, and that almost makes the potter forget his lines. If only 1 in 5 persons had faces that shined as much as that one pot, people would have less trouble and would smile a lot. After struggling for 5 separate things to succeed, and as a result only producing 1 good deed, you feel incomplete and have a lack of self-esteem. But Godhead will, you know, accept you as something it can redeem. It must have been this way when God made Adam out of clay, when there were dinosaurs and creation was in disarray. But right then, light popped out of the clouds and removed Adam's sadness, which came in shrouds. Adam shouted out loud. This last poem, entitled Tsunami, is about the waves of distrust that the young have for the older generations, and how these waves of ignorance that the elders engulfed the young with are what created real tsunamis like we had a while back in history a couple years ago. Here is the poem. Why do adults say they know what is going to happen when their adulterated view caused huge mishaps like Hiroshima and Nagasaki in Japan? Pinocchio trusts, even though disaster strikes in a blur. Even when the superpowers of the older generation show fault, the children nap as this belligerence occurs. Why are there no myths for the blameless children? Are the artless melodramas of the forefathers that control them by default closing the doors to the mind's eye of the halls of truth, leaving open wicked houses built by ignorance? Old age is overripe fruits of wrath, where the aged stumble over the new generation that stands in their way on their narrow path. This shows that our leaders and God himself have not done their math. Saul had the gall to beguile and lead Christians to their fall, while he looked in the mirror seeing himself after he had persecuted his fellow Christians as very tall. Religion should have been written by the young, from whom hope has always sprung. Don't the grown-ups spit out all their trust of mankind and the hope of freedom as they put their favor in youth's oppression? Aren't they the ones who said first, we don't need them? Thank you very much.
Hi, everybody. This is Monique Marquisa de Magdalena. I'm going to give you a little bio, a little background about who I am. And I was born Joanna Plantine in Sacramento on March 8th, 1954. I'm a Pisces with Libra rising, Taurus moon, and born to creative parents who loved film, art, and theater. And my mother used to give me blank paper to draw pictures with, so I'd make up stories and illustrate them. And this gave me a lot of freedom, which was very important to me. And my father was into drama and used to create skits for me and my brother to do at home and then later at school. And I got dragged to tons and tons of art galleries and museums in Sacramento, New York, and in Europe. And all this influenced my work, which today I combine spoken word with music, acting, movement, and dance. This poem, Marie Antoinette Speaks, came out of the inspirations that were coming before the movie Sofia Coppola's film Marie Antoinette came out. And then I wrote this poem. Before the movie came and was shown, I wrote this poem first. Marie Antoinette Speaks. Looking back at that frilly lifetime, stabbing revenge through pink satin dresses, corsets, and that stupid high hairdo with powder, rich old cronies indulging in ridiculous pleasures, and me wanting to play sweet country peasant girl in my play thatch roof house. But I guess I kind of overdid it a little bit. Getting hooked on gambling, flirting, and those stupid cream puffs. Some people call me the big hoe who's spending too much of France's money on such petty stuff, big poofy hairdos and designer clothes. But the revolutionaries didn't know everything about my circumstances. And then the big drama, me being brought to that nasty, big, dark, shiny guillotine, paying the price for all the others' follies, too. Bull. Generations of mistakes falling on my neck. But I wasn't, and I wasn't going to flinch one inch for this crazy crowd. No way. The hell with them. And give them what they want. 2 of my escape plans failed anyway. 1 last show and I'm out of here. Let them have my head, my body. All I wanted was just to have a little fun. Let them sacrifice their silly virgin and let them have my blood and suck everything out of me. And let them choke on this queen's dirty and impure blood. Ha. This poem, Crack Glass on Street, was totally influenced by two things. My friend Patrick, who went out on a full-blown crack run that, as far as I know, he may still be on, which has lasted more than 3 years. And the second thing that influenced it was the San Francisco phenomenon, of which I see a lot by my workplace where I used to park my car, which was around Grove and Fulton near Franklin. And then later I'd see all over San Francisco. This is called Crack Glass on Street. Crack glass on street. From a distance, as I walk, I see beautiful sparkling diamonds neatly piled in a pyramid shape by this black shiny car that had a broken window on the side. Crack glass on street. Glass cracked on the sidewalk. Windows busted to steal my guitar, my CD player, money in the glove box, my gray coat, there may be money in the pocket. What a steal, all for 8 rocks of crack. Crack glass on street, you see it everywhere. Don't leave anything valuable in your car, because this ain't Kansas anymore. Wake up. Crack glass on street, get real, get high, get cracked, get whacked, and then die. Crack glass on street, your broken glass pipe, your last dream, your last suck. Your skinny body down to 99 pounds, down to the bones. Crack glass on street. You'll do anything for it, for that quick fix. One last hit to kill my pain, to kill my mind and demons, to make everything stop. So high, too quick. Crack glass on street. You'll do anything for it. Give your body, let him have you, get naked, and do stupid things like have sex with strangers wearing no condoms. Crack glass on street. Hopefully you'll be able to stop, but it might not be for a very, very long, long time, or a very long run, or until you lose everything, your car, your apartment, your job, your money, your body, your friends, your mind, your sanity. You know what happens next. Crack glass on street. Hopefully my friend, Patrick, will remember how good his life was with his friends, with his apartment, with his job. And no more of crack glass on street. This poem, Female Rising, came out of after seeing the movie The Da Vinci Code and hearing that the divine feminine era from my metaphysical friend is happening right now. A friend had mentioned the anarchist Emma Goldman, and I read a bio about her and got very interested in her. Female Rising. Emma Goldman is back. Her ghost is loud and clear. Work unfinished is now ripe to crack open. Female Rising, bringing back the balance. It's time to step up, girl, and move into any position you desire. How many years of oppression lies in the Bible about Mary Magdalene? Mean presidents who lie and do bad karmas for our great America. We don't have to be part of this stuff anymore. The revolution is on and it's hot and the female is rising. Don't try to keep her down or sit on her volcano. Just let her slit open and explode. Some versions of her may wear red high stiletto heels, wearing tight leopard skirts and low-cut black lacy see-through tops. Tight-fitted gray pinstripe suits with black garters underneath, making her feel powerful and political. Support all the great prostitutes, sluts, and dominatrixes now, and let Emma come out, and let her high-pitched orgasm shatter all the fake and false little men who come tumbling down from White Houses and tall towers, cracking foundations, breaking under their stupid cowboy boots. The hell with them, they're all dead and busted. And amidst the smoke rises Emma, Mary Magdalene, and all other great woman leaders, the great anarchists, fighting and taking back what is rightfully ours anyway. The revolution is on, and she's hot and getting hotter. Just be yourself and do whatever you want to do and explode wide open. All the doors are open now. The revolution is on. Speak your truth. Show the others. Be yourself and be bold. Wear whatever you want to. Have sex with whoever you like. The time is ripe. The time is now. The great female rising. The revolution has begun. And what are you going to do about it? Thank you, everybody, for listening today. And thanks to John Rhodes. And have a beautiful day. And we'll see you next time.
Hello. My name is Dorothy Walters. I grew up in Oklahoma. I started writing poetry there when I was a little child and have written off and on since that time. When I grew up, I took a PhD in English and became a teacher in various universities in the Midwest for many years. I taught women's studies and women's literature and was very proud to be part of the establishment of one of the first women's studies programs in the country. I moved to San Francisco in 1988 and subsequently published my first book of poetry after the age of 70, and I was also very proud of that fact. In 1981, I had a major spiritual awakening which changed my life forever. When I say spiritual awakening, I'm not talking about the traditional born-again type of awakening. I'm speaking of something along the lines of spontaneous kundalini awakening, a subject that is still not too well known in our society. But for me, it was deeply spiritual and has shaped the poetry that I have written since that time. I have been deeply influenced by writers like Rumi and Hafiz and Mirabai, and some of the poems that I'm going to read will show that influence. First, I'm going to read from the book of poems, my first book, called Marrow of Flame, Poems of the Spiritual Journey. Seekers. Each of us is searching for a wise man or woman to lead us, to present us a scroll heavy with answers. Some of us have climbed the mountain, tracked the glacier's crust, lain down in snow for days, years, burning away to essence, preparing. Others have clung to the underside of overhanging rock until their fingers turned to stone, until they were riveted like lead to this thin edge of certainty. And others wander, drifting like mist through the valleys. What is it we are seeking? What will we do if we are brushed by this lion's mane? Don't make lists. Every day a new flower rises from your body's fresh soil. Don't go around looking for fallen petals in a fairy tale when you've got the golden plant right here, now, shooting forth in light from your eyes, your awakening crown. Don't make lists or explore ancient accounts. Forget everything you know and open. The task. This is like a lover who gives no rest, but demands and demands and demands. Do you think this is a time for pausing? For lying about under the pine trees, sampling your lunch pail? If you are chosen to be the consort, do not refuse the king. If you have been outfitted for a journey to the Himalayas, do not nibble away your provisions before you reach the ice. What is happening? Moment to moment, we ask, what is happening? The sound of shattering everywhere. Is it the world fragmenting at last? Or our own hearts cracking, the final breakup of ice? The yogi inside. What she wants is not words, nor fastenings, nor doctrine spilling over her like salt, nor precincts set off by markers. This is sacred space. Wherever she steps is holy ground. Moving, she traces streams of light with her hands, her body. When she listens, she becomes a spreading tree of silence that knows only itself. A thousand ways. The beloved knows a thousand ways to enter your body. When you were young, she sent you a lover of flesh who stood near to awaken your nature. Now God is your unseen paramour, arriving without notice on unexpected occasions. To discover her, turn gently and follow your breath to the center of your being. This next set of poems is from an unpublished volume called A Cloth of Fine Gold. The first poems that I'll read were heavily influenced, or in fact, many are dedicated to Mirabai. And Mirabai, as you may remember, was one of those marvelous, marvelous early women saints of India who renounced a family marriage position and went out on the roads and took off her clothes and danced. Nothing but nakedness. Fling off your clothing and strip away your bangles and braided scarves, your silken undergarments and jeweled shoes. Nothing but nakedness suffices on this route. Know that the one you seek will gaze straight through you, bones and all, and see you exactly as you are, a being made from emptiness, a radiant pinpoint, an image sculpted of light. Holy fire. Some love like packed volcanoes exploding, ash and fire spewing over mountains and shores, igniting everything in their path, as if all history, stretched to the edge, were returning in a river of hot remembrance, a blaze of flowing passion and grief. Fields turn into lakes of flame, devouring air, swallowing sky. Earth surges in streams of blood and clay, and trees are sudden torches, beacons signaling distant heaven. Other loves are like soft candles that spread their glow into the curtained corners of the house. Hands of light, soothing the darkness, caressing the quiet awake. Who is to say which is God? I think I should explain that I sometimes use the word God in my poems, but I consider that to be the generic deity, spelled with a small g, and it represents simply the divine. To me, that word is not intended as male or female in its aspects, but rather a combination of both or that which transcends both. More poems for Mirabai. The Besotted Follower. To dance in this field of radiance, what will I give? My good name, long since taken from me. My tattered robe, with mud for its hem. Oh, no, haven't seen it for days. Family, friends, all have vanished, have turned their faces away. Still I dance, moving this way or that, following the inner currents, celebrating the hidden bliss. My lone partner, Krishna, and his silver flute, that music which plays only for those willing to be shattered again and again, ravished by sweetness, torn by joy. Morning chant. I do not wish to make something happen, to force open a gate or a window of bars in order to find my way in. All I want is to be here with you the way it was last night. Krishna, do not abandon me, whatever comes. I need you in my blood and bones to feel your inner flowering even when I wander, lost in the meadows of thought. You are the wild honey I crave, the blue jewel of radiance in my dreams, the one who opens my eyes each morning and says, "Behold, what loveliness this is all about." Thank you all for listening. Thank you, John, for bringing back the art of spoken poetry, which has been absent to a great extent for so long. And of course, poetry is meant to be spoken and to be heard. So this has been a lovely experience being with you today. Thanks.
This ends Mystic Babylon Open Mic Poetry Podcast. Please come back soon. Thank you.
This podcast is a member of the Association of Poetry Podcasting at poetrypodcasting.org.